Growing up, I didn't go to church on Sunday mornings, but on Friday nights, both my mom and I would sit down and watch movies, and she would show them from a Christian perspective.
Growing up, we were out in the woods, so I didn't watch many movies, but I learned to look around me and find a spiritual lesson in everything I saw.
So now, I want you guys to experience the goodness of God in the movies we watch.
Join us as we unpack meaning from the movies we watch.
I'm Movie Apologist Clark.
And I'm Bethany.
And this is Movie Night Apologetics. Well, what is up, movie lovers? Welcome back to the podcast that loves to show you the goodness of God in the movies we watch. And today, we're going to be going over a famous, well-crafted, well-acted movie called There Will Be Blood. And this was recommended to my buddy Glenn from my Bible study. And I just got to say, shout out to my buddy Glenn, because that dude's awesome. Because he is just one of those faithful guys that goes to my Bible study, and I just really appreciate having him there week in and week out. So thank you, Glenn, for recommending this awesome movie, and we're going to get to our ratings and reviews and the description of the movie in a little bit. But before we do, I got a complaint for Amazon. Okay, so we, Bethany and I, started watching this movie on a Friday night, January 31st, and we're, what, 20 minutes in?
Yeah, it was 20 minutes
in. It was 20 minutes in, and you're like, I don't want to watch this movie anymore. It's boring, blah, 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 blah.
It was making me feel yucky. I didn't want to watch it anymore.
And so I'm like, fine, we can watch it tomorrow. It's free on Amazon, whatever. So we go the next day, and I turn it on, and lo and behold, it says, rent movie for $3.99. And I'm thinking, wait, what? We were just watching this yesterday for free. Well, apparently, Amazon didn't let us know that the last day to watch that for free was on January 31st. And so February 1st comes along and it's like, oh, we got to rent it now. And so now Bethany has to not only watch a movie that makes her feel dirty or whatever, but we have to pay for the movie.
I'm sorry.
So I just have to say, Amazon, when you're going to like take stuff off, I know you listen to this podcast. You and Disney both listen to this podcast. Please just let your customers know when you're going to take the movie off of it. So that way we could have watched it for free, but no.
It actually took us 3 days to watch it.
Yeah, it did take us 3 days because then we rented it Saturday. We got through like an hour of it and then we're like, oh my goodness. I mean, it's like almost a 3 hour movie.
You kept saying, it's going to pick up. It's going to pick up. I don't know why you gave it such a beautiful introduction.
Well crafted, well done movie. Blah, blah, blah. I loved it so much.
Well, I did once everything was finished.
Actually, that's funny because I hated it up until the very last scene. And then I was like, that was a pretty good movie.
The last scene made it worth the wait. But I mean, it was a very slow burn movie, and I think they could have chopped off an hour of it. Did you know that when I was talking to Scott about this, I was like, hey, I think they could have chopped off an hour. He's like, what do you mean? Like, what kind of part would you have chopped off? I'm like, I don't know, Scott. He's like, it's a drama. I'm like, I don't care. You can kind of cut it up to make it shorter. I mean, Kurt Rudd, I don't know. I'll forgive 2001 Space Odyssey for making it so dang slow because that was like 40-something years before this movie. But this movie was in 2008, 2007? There was no reason for it to be that slow.
Okay, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. We haven't even described the movie yet.
Okay, well, why don't you go into the movie then?
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and give all the spoilers all the time, as our podcast does. So this movie was actually inspired by the book Oil by Upton Sinclair, which was written as kind of like a political satire. So it follows Daniel, our so likable protagonist.
Oh, he is so likable.
We just love Daniel.
Oh, we love
good
him.
Good man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, just a man of God.
Isn't he? Yes, he confesses it, doesn't he? So he's looking for fortune. So we follow him as he uncovers oil, and he founds this oil empire, and he tricks this family into selling him their land that has oil on it, And in exchange, he's going to supply a member of this family. It's the Sunday family, and the guy is Eli. Eli Sunday is a pastor. And in exchange for them selling the land, the pastor says, I want you to fund my church. And Eli Sunday says, let me bless your oil well. And he doesn't. Daniel doesn't let him bless the well.
Once he did that and he didn't let the guy bless it, I'm like, oh boy, there's going to be some drama here.
Yep. Bad things happen. Bad things happen to Daniel's quote unquote son. More about that later. And in the end, Eli Sunday comes to confront Daniel in his empty mansion about the money that he owes him.
Hey, he had a bowling alley, all right? I mean, it wasn't empty. I mean, that was a cool bowling alley. Which yeah, I didn't even know how the pins would have worked. I mean, you know, if they knocked him down, would they have to run back over there and pick him up? I don't know how that worked.
You know, it strikes me as I'm finishing saying that, like, I summed up a three-hour movie in, like, four sentences. And there really wasn't much more. Like, there was more,
there was more, and I'm sure you can break more of it down. But, yeah, that's pretty much it. Sorry, Scott. There could have been an hour edited off of this. I'm just saying.
I'll have more on that later, too.
Yeah. Well, anyways, we rate this movie, both Bethany and I, and we give our ratings water, soda, slushy. Water being, it was just a horrible movie, bad movie. Soda is, you know, it's a good movie. Like, we like it. And slushy is just this amazing, marvelous masterpiece of a movie. And so, Bethany, why don't you just start us off with your lovely rating of the movie?
It might surprise you to know I rate it as a soda.
What?
Yeah. I know you're surprised you got that high of a rating.
You know what's so stupid, though, is you rated Simon Birch a water and this a soda. Why is that?
Simon Birch? What was that even about? I don't even remember watching it.
It was about...
No, I'm kidding.
I mean, you rated that as
okay,
a water...
Okay, I'm rating this higher for its artistry.
Okay, fine.
For its provocative scenery, for its interesting narrative. Like, it has redeemable qualities, I think. But I hated the tense feeling of this film.
Like, I don't even know. You had some people talking just randomly, and you had this very intense violin playing in the background. It's like, hey, Bob, what you up to?
Yeah, they had these. It was like horror music.
Yeah.
Constantly in the background, mm-hmm. No matter what was happening. So he was like digging, and it's like, didn't. He's okay, chatting with the
Jaws.
Pastor. Didn't. So that just created this constant feeling of dread. And I'm sure it was deliberate.
Yes.
But I hated it.
See, I kind of like that. I mean, I didn't like the music per se, but I liked the intense feeling. I'm just saying.
Gross. I can't imagine, like, enjoying dread. What's wrong with you people?
What's wrong with you?
Okay. So one of the things I liked about the film was it didn't seem to be judging characters one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
It was just presenting people. It was like, here's Daniel. Here's what he says. Here's what he does. We're not going to say he's a good guy or a bad guy. This is just his life. Mm-hmm. Right? Here's Eli Sunday. We're not going to say if he's a good guy or a bad guy. Here's what he says and what he does. You make up your mind.
How would the movie make up that mind for you?
By the way that it presents people. You can present somebody in a way that is clearly trying to say, I'm a bad guy, I'm bad news, you shouldn't like me. But they didn't really do that. They showed both Daniel and Eli in gentle moments where they were being kind and good.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right? It didn't feel like the movie was trying to convince me who these guys were. It was just saying, here they are, here's what they do, here's what they say.
Yeah, okay.
Which I just think it was an interesting approach. And it makes us the judges.
I love being a judge.
Right. You're so judgmental all the time. And so that made me a lot more invested than I ordinarily would be in this type of film. And it really was a thought-provoking movie, and I will remember it.
Well, for me, it didn't quite hit slushy, but it definitely hit soda somewhere in between. I wonder actually how a soda and slushy mixed together would taste. When I was writing this in, I'm like,
I think that'd be good.
I think that'd be good.
With the right soda?
I should try it. If we go to the movie theater when we're going to go see Captain America, maybe we should like mix the slushy and the soda. Like get Sprite or something and then the blue raspberry slushy. Be good. I wonder how good that would be.
I think that would actually make it perfect because the slushies are too sweet and it might actually mellow it out a little bit.
Maybe we should try that. I don't know.
Okay.
Anyways, so yeah, I rated it in between a soda and a slushy. And the main reason you guys all know this is that the movie was just a little bit too slow. They could have chopped off at least 30 minutes of it. But again, that's my personal opinion. Scott, you have yours. I know it's wrong, but that's that's what it is. I mean, you just. It's so stupid, though. He's saying, like, any kind of critique I make of an artsy film like 2001 or There Will Be Blood, it's like, I'm wrong for making my critique. I'm sorry. Those people making those films aren't the be-all, end-all of art making. There can be things that you can poke at with them and critique about it.
You can be critiqued on your critique.
I guess I could. I guess I could. But, you know, it just nagged me or whatever.
You poor thing.
It doesn't make sense. Movies, to a certain extent, are subjective to each individual person.
But
What
did you like about the movie?
What I liked about it was the great acting. With Daniel Day-Lewis. He is a fantastic actor. This is actually the first time I've seen him in a movie. And then when I was talking to Scott again about this, he showed me a clip of him playing Abraham Lincoln in the movie Lincoln. And it was a really good job. And I'm going to say this. This is going to be blasphemous to those who are Breaking Bad fans like myself. But if Vince Gilligan, the creator of Breaking Bad, decided to cast Daniel Day-Lewis as Walter White, I would have zero problem with that. I think he would be a really good Walter White. But again, I mean, Bryan Cranston in Breaking Bad does a wonderful job playing Walter White. But I think Daniel Day-Lewis can do an equally good job of that. Because that milkshake scene at the end, I'm like, oh my gosh, it was just amazing. Glenn was quoting it at the end of Bible study when he recommended it to me one night. And he was quoting that scene. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, oh, you'll see. And then the whole movie, I'm like, where is this scene? And then it's at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Of course it is. Yeah. But anyways, I also really liked the tension between Daniel and Eli. Just the two, the one where when Eli says, hey, let me pray over it. And he's like, thinking about it. And he's like, nah. And then I knew that there was going to be tension from there on out because I knew there was going to be problems with the oil rig and people getting hurt. And then the Eli Sunday was going to be like, well, this happened because I didn't pray over the well and bless it, Daniel. And so I really liked that tension. And plus the cinematography was really good. It was very well done. I really enjoyed seeing all the desert. I mean, it really felt like you were back in early 1900s.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. I mean, they did a really good job with that. And then, you know, I'm always a sucker for the depravity of man, and whether it be in TV shows or movies, because and this is one of the reasons I love, and weirdly enough, why I love this type of movie, whether it's this type of movie with him being a capitalist, like trying to screw everyone over that he can, or say like a Breaking Bad Walter White, where he is just trying to get as much money as he can. What I love about these movies and TV shows that have this total depravity of man, chasing after wealth is that when you, if they do it well, which this movie did it really well, is at the end of the day, your wealth isn't going to satisfy you. And we clearly saw that at the end of the movie when he's just sitting all miserable and alone in his mansion. And it's like, clearly what you're striving after, it did not live up to the expectation.
That it doesn't explain why you love the depravity of man so much in The Walking Dead. Nobody's pursuing wealth in The Walking Dead.
What does Walking Dead have to do with this?
It's very much about the depravity of man.
Well, yeah.
I think you just like bad guys.
I like seeing bad guys just wither away.
You especially like it when they're extra villainous, like unbelievably Listen, villainous.
You have your milkshake, and I have my milkshake way over here, and I have my straw, and I drink it up. And that's what I do with movies and bad guys in movies.
Wish you could see me rolling my eyes.
I didn't have the quote to that. I know I screwed up that quote really bad, but I just thought it was fine. So anyways, those were the reasons I really loved it. With that being said, I'm probably not going to watch this movie again.
Yeah, me neither. Do you want to hear a fun fact that's going to make sense of one reason you don't like this film?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
Okay. So the original script had no dialogue for the first 30 minutes. And the actual movie doesn't have dialogue for the first 20 minutes.
Which is why you wanted to quit the first 20 minutes.
I sure did.
On Friday night, which made us spend $4 on the movie.
There were just dudes digging with horror music in the background. So the guy who made the movie, he said that he had a dream about making a movie with no dialogue in it, just music and pictures.
Did you know Castaway, was it called, is it called Castaway with Tom Hanks?
Yeah.
Yeah, that movie, I think there was like a span of 30-something plus minutes where he didn't talk.
But it makes sense because he's alone.
That's true. It is because he's alone.
And he doesn't have horror music playing in the background.
Yeah, it's a little bit calmer.
And it's not him looking for oil on an island.
That would be cool. I don't think that would happen, but that'd be cool.
I would actually watch that.
You're right. So my fun fact is, this is kind of crazy. Daniel Plainview is loosely based on a real person. So there was this well-known oil tycoon called Edward Donaghy in the United States in the early 1900s. And Daniel is based loosely on him. Some examples of this would be, they were both from the same place. Fond du Lac in Wisconsin. That's a weird name for a Wisconsin town.
Yeah, it's French. That means it's unpronounceable.
You know,
don't even try.
Do you know where I live? I live in Fond du Lac. It's like, what? What?
And just wait, like, we're going to get corrected and it's going to be something like,
oh, probably. And so another one is, both men worked in the Geological Survey in Kansas and were miners before going into oil. So we see that at the first part of the movie, he was clearly mining before he went into oil. And then we see Daniel in his mansion at the end of the film, like I mentioned. These scenes were filmed actually at Greystone Mansion in Beverly Hills. That house was actually built by Donaghy for his son. So the guy that Daniel Plainview was loosely based on, that guy, Donaghy, built the mansion for his son, Edward Donaghy Jr.
That's wild.
Yeah. That's,
it's really cool that they could get that mansion to film in.
Yeah. I don't even know how they would. Man, I wonder if that guy got paid pretty nice money for that.
I'm sure he needs it. But I'm pretty sure it's not pronounced Donaghy. It looks like Doheny.
Doheny. Sorry. Donaghy, Doheny, the H. It's cool. Yeah. It's cool. It's fine. All right. So, and then the last one to kind of resemble Daniel Plainview's, how he's loosely based on this person, is that Daniel's famous milkshake speech at the end of the film is loosely based on transcripts from the hearings of the Teapot Dome scandal, which involved Edward Doheny. Which, do you know what the Teapot Dome Scandal is?
Nope, no idea.
Huh.
Anyways. Okay, here's something weird. So when the guys were editing this movie, they would have one night a week where they would have just steak and vodka for dinner. And the idea that it would keep them in the mentality of Daniel Plainview, because that's probably the kind of things Daniel would be eating, just steak and vodka.
But you normally hear actors do that, not editors, right?
Well, the editors, you know, they wanted to keep themselves. So I think it's actually just justification, because I think that's
it has to be.
That's just a guy dinner, I mean, steak and vodka.
Seriously. That can't be. I mean, that's a justification, because that's BS. Right,
you know what there. That actually reminds me of?
What?
Glenn.
What about Glenn? What do you got to say about my buddy Glenn?
So his wife told me that on their first date, he had her over for dinner.
I'm sorry, Glenn. I did not plan this. It's not in the notes. Anyways, go ahead.
But during their first date, he had her over to dinner at his house, and he just walked up to her and handed her a steak, like not on a plate. He just put a steak in her hand, and that was dinner.
Was it cooked?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine. What's wrong with that? People hand hot dogs as hot dog buns. Why can't you just hand a steak? I mean, why are some foods considered finger foods and others fork and knife foods?
Okay.
Why do we gotta play this?
I'm right. It's guy dinner. That's just a guy dinner. Steak and vodka. It's all you need.
Dude, I mean, I don't mind the steak. I mean, the vodka is kind of weird. I'm not a big vodka fan.
Okay, so I feel kind of bad for teasing you for a question you asked me when we were watching this movie. Because so in an early scene, Paul Sunday goes to Daniel to tell him about the oil that's on his family's farm.
Mm-hmm.
And then later we meet Eli Sunday, and you said, isn't that the same guy? Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, they're brothers. But they were played by the same guy.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you. I wasn't crazy. I'm pretty sure this dude talked to Daniel when he was trying to sell out the family.
Yeah, you're good,
like,
with faces.
And you're like, no. I'm like, oh, I don't know. It looks like the same dude to me.
Yeah, the plot is that they're twins.
Yeah, but it was just played by the same guy.
So I apologize.
Thank you for your apology. That's probably one of the few that you'll ever hear on this podcast.
From me.
Anyways, well, before we get into our scenes and themes of the movie, if you guys could just rate this podcast 5 stars for us. It really helps when people are trying to look at movie podcasts and trying to find a movie podcast to listen to. And so if you can just rate it, review it. And then also if you want to share this episode or the podcast with someone you know, that would be great, because sometimes people find out podcasts just by word of mouth. So if you can do those few things for us, that would be really helpful. But anyways, let's get into the scenes and themes of today. And so we're going to start out with the scenes of the movie first.
So I'm going to start with the ending, because I've been complaining so much about the music in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's all just horror music. It's filling me with dread. It's all violins. Until the very end scene where Daniel murders Eli, and then he's in the bowling alley and he says to his servant, I'm finished. And then suddenly there's a happy song.
That was kind of weird. Did you have any interpretation to why it was happy music at the end there?
Because it's a freaking art film. It's probably meant to, I don't know, imitate what's going on the inside of Daniel's mind. Because Daniel, after striving all his life, finally he has finished his striving.
Yeah, but now he's going to go to prison or something for the rest of his life because he bashed a dude's head with a pinball.
Details.
Pin, or what are those things called? Pins?
Bowling pin?
Bowling pins, that's it.
Yeah.
So one of the scenes that I was really intrigued by was, I don't know if this was the first scene that we met Eli Sunday, But it was definitely one of the first scenes where we see him in his church in Third Revelation, which you did a study on Revelation with your gals in your Bible study.
I don't think he's talking about Revelation at all.
Oh, okay.
Because the church is called the Third Revelation,
so what,
as though there's a new revelation of the gospel.
Oh. See, I was thinking it had something to do with Revelation 3. Like Revelation chapter 3.
No, I think he's implying that he has some new revelation that the rest of the Christians don't have.
Ooh, I didn't catch that. Anyways, one of the first scenes that we see of Eli, he's healing this woman's hand. And I find it interesting because a lot of, not in every charismatic circle or anything, but definitely like with hyper charismatic stuff, like what we see with this, where he's just really involved with healing, but not really preaching out of God's word, the Bible. And he's going over to this woman's hand who has arthritis. Yeah. And he's like, there is a demon in your hand and we got to get that demon out. And he's like doing all these things to, I don't know what he's doing. He's praying the demon out of her hand and whatnot. And I just find it interesting that why is it that these people like this, why is everything like, if you have a health issue, I mean, it's probably a demon in your hand, but, you know, God forbid that they focus on, you know, Jesus for one, and then also the sins and the pride of the people's hearts. Like, I mean, yes, Jesus healed people. He came and he did heal people. But he also talked about, you know, how to enter the kingdom of God, like how to build the kingdom of God, what you should do in your heart to repent and be changed and be like him. I mean, he taught his disciples that. He didn't just go around and be like, you have a demon and we got to get that demon out of you, but said nothing about the human heart. And this guy, that's all he does.
Well, and Jesus didn't blame things on demons.
Yeah.
Like they talked about a tower that fell on a lot of people, killed a lot of people in Jesus' time. Mm-hmm. And Jesus brought that up as to say, sometimes bad things happen. Mm. It doesn't mean that God intended it. It doesn't mean that the devil intended it. Bad things happen.
But I'm just, that's one of the things I noticed with Eli's healing of the woman's hand is that he was more concerned about getting the demon out rather than having those people's hearts and their minds changed and softened towards God to follow him. And I think that's one of the reasons you could probably see like a false teacher in this case is that there's some wacky things in his theology where definitely red flags.
Yes, and the way that he was moving when he was casting the demon out of her hand.
Yeah, that was weird.
Well, it made me think that he was practicing some form of hypnotism.
Mm.
So that she would feel like whatever
something
he was doing
was happening.
Working.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And so, that's just something to keep in mind is, we got to focus on people's hearts and that sort of thing versus, I think there are people that have the gift of healing and can, ask God to help heal and whatnot. But at the end of the day, I think God does care about hearts and minds changed versus just the healing of an arthritis hand and thinking it's
an
demon.
Arthritic hand.
An arthritic hand?
Yes, not an arthritis hand.
Oh, is that how you pronounce it?
That's
you're
what
always
you would
pronounce
say.
Oh, okay.
You're pronouncing it correctly. You're just using the wrong form. So one scene that stood out to me was when Daniel is playing at the beach with his not brother, the guy who's pretending to be his brother.
The not? What beach is this? I didn't see an ocean in this movie.
Did we watch the same movie?
When did I see a beach?
Okay, so the guy comes along who says, I'm your brother. Do you remember that guy?
Oh my gosh, I don't.
This is the guy he murdered.
Oh, so wait. Oh, the guy that he said, yeah, I hate everybody?
Yeah.
That was his brother?
It was not. It was not his brother. Did you miss that whole subplot?
Yes, apparently. I was kind of confused by that guy just showing up, and then he's like, hey, come live with me. And by the way, I hate every living soul on this earth and just want to take advantage of them.
Okay, it, so, yeah, so this guy had met his real brother, who Daniel had never met because they had different fathers? Mothers? No, wait, they did have the same parents. But anyways, he had never met this brother. But this brother was trying to find him, and he met this other dude, and the other dude was like, oh, I'm just going to pretend to be you because the actual brother died.
Oh, so that guy pretended to be the brother?
Yes.
And is that why Daniel murdered him? Because he found out that he wasn't the actual brother?
Yes.
Oh, that makes a lot more sense now. I'm like, dang. I see, I thought he just killed the dude because that's just, you know, who he was. I mean, obviously, he's a bad dude.
He's a bad dude, but he did have a little reasoning behind that. The guy was lying to him. He was trying to deceive him.
What was the purpose in him deceiving? Just because he wanted a stake in the oil company?
Well, that's what Daniel would have assumed. We don't know what his intentions were. It sounded to me like this guy just needed a place to go, and that seemed like a place to go.
Yeah, you would think. Now, looking at hindsight, that if I heard what that guy was talking about and I was lying to him about being, you know, his brother, I'd probably book it out of there, because that, I mean, that was a red flag and that dude should have just fled. But no, he stayed and then he got killed in his sleep.
Yep, he should have fled.
I did not know that. Anyways.
Anyways, so something stood out to me when they were talking with each other, because Daniel was saying that on the street where they both grew up, but I mean, this guy hadn't really grown up. It's very convenient.
Yeah. Yeah. You remember that house? Yeah. You want to remind me again what it looked like? Oh, you know the man.
That was exactly the lines that happened that made Daniel realize that the guy was not his brother. So
did I actually just quote a line
it was because the dude couldn't recognize the farm that Daniel was talking about. You know, remember the name of the farm down the road? What was that called? And the dude was like, oh, it doesn't matter. And that's when Daniel was like, you're not really my brother.
Wow.
Did we?
No, I watched it. I just kind of zoned out with that part. I'm going to be honest. I zoned out with that
during
part.
During this well-crafted movie that you talked up in the intro? What's that about?
Okay.
Anyways, still haven't said my line. So Daniel's saying, okay, on that street where we grew up, there was this mansion that I really wanted, and that was the reason why I decided to go into oil and make all this money. And his brother was like, oh, wouldn't it be great if you could go back and buy that house now? And Daniel said, I think if I saw that house now, it'd make me sick.
Mm. What about that stood out to you?
I think what he might be saying is, since that house was behind his... the thing inside of you that makes you want to go. What's that word? Motivation.
Wow. Tongue twister.
I couldn't find a word. It was scary. That house.
Now you
was
know just... how my whole life feels like.
Self-dig. So that house was his motivation to go into oil, to climb the ladder by stepping on people's faces. Mm-hmm. And now that house would make him sick. Like, as though he had this moment of clarity that everything he had done was yucky and wrong and not worth it. Like, it was too hard.
So you think he doesn't like the person he's become? Is that what I'm hearing?
That's the only clue that I saw.
What about if he... Because clearly he keeps doing what he's doing by... I mean, he still keeps digging for oil, keeps getting rich. He has a mansion at the end. So clearly he doesn't learn from that line. I almost wonder if the mansion that he was looking at was less than what he was anticipating in the future with what he was doing. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like saying, oh, yeah, there was this house on 23rd Street, and it was just like... it was a nice house, but it wasn't great. and you think, man, I want to get in the oil because, man, I want to have that house someday. But then you get all this money and you're like, I could have a better house than that. That house makes me sick. Maybe it could it be interpreted that way?
That could have been that way. But I feel like when he was around his not brother, he was a lot softer. And he talked more about how he was really feeling on the inside. So I just feel like that could have been the one moment where he was like, I don't know if I picked the right path.
Hey, Scott, if you're listening, which one of us is right in this interpretation?
What makes him the judge?
I don't know. Apparently, he's really good at judging artsy films. Apparently, I can't have any critiques. So maybe, just maybe, he would have some opinion in this. I'm just saying. So another scene that I really enjoyed, and you know, I'm a sucker for people who are like a clock, or who are like a broken clock that are right twice a day, because we definitely see this with Eli, because there is one scene in where he was talking about with his congregation that he basically said universalism is a lie. And I just thought, man, okay, we got a broken clock here, but he's right in this, at least. He's right twice a day. And the reason why I wanted to bring this up is because, at least with his church, the third Revelation Church, whatever the crap that means, when he was giving this sermon, though what he said was true, that not everyone's going to be saved, he sounded really prideful and arrogant in being saved. Like, hey guys, you know, not everyone is saved, but you know what? We're saved.
We're special.
And it's like, there are those churches out there that just think that they're the one true remnant church that just God has ordained and whatnot. And I just have to say, like, if you're looking at this, if say you're a former Christian or unbeliever or a Christian and you see this and you're like, man, like Christians are arrogant, we have to remember that there are people that there are Christians that are authentic in their faith that don't believe in universalism, but they also will say, hey, you know what? We mourn for the loss of people that don't know Jesus and don't know who God is. Like we are just, Martin Luther that said, we're just beggars telling another beggar where to get the bread. What was that quote? I can't remember that quote.
I don't recognize that.
Okay. Well, anyways. But I think of one analogy that makes you really think about this is think about a plane crashing and all these prisoners jump out of a plane and everyone has a parachute, but then you're the only one that opens up the parachute. Or, you know, there are several people that open up parachutes, but the other prisoners aren't opening up the parachute.
Yeah.
It's not because the prisoners are better. It's just they're more humble. Be like, man, I need to not die from this fall. And so I think it's the same way with that, is that there's Christians that, yeah, while we believe that there's no such thing as universalism, that everyone will be saved, we also mourn peoples and them not knowing who Jesus is.
Okay. I'm not sure if, as an attentive audience, we should have noticed this from the beginning, but the kid, HW, who is supposed to be Daniel's son, is not Daniel's son.
Dun, dun, dun. Which, personally, I was kind of asking that question throughout the film, at least at the first part when that one minor dude died, or oil dude. I was like, is that the father of that kid? Or
And we weren't sure because we weren't paying that much attention.
Yeah.
We were just like, oh, dude's standing in a hole. One of them died.
Well, and to be fair, when those two were like both dirty and in their
work,
I mean, they kind of looked similar.
Yeah, they did.
So
basically Daniel took over raising HW as his own son so that he could look like a family-friendly guy. When he came in and told people, I am going to do great things for your town by digging an oil well right here. It's going to be great. My son thinks so too. Isn't he cute? But I think he did invest a little bit into HW. Like, how could you not?
He was a cute kid.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a cute kid. If that had been the kid in the road, I would have felt like, yeah, he's worth dying for.
I don't know why you're dissing the kid in the road. Like,
that came out of my mouth.
Yeah, that kid's not worth dying for, but the other kid is. Like, wow. You're about as cutthroat as Daniel Plainview.
He rubbed off on me. But there was this scene where the oil rig lit on fire. And
that was a pretty cool scene.
HW had been sitting on a canopy above it. And when there was an explosion, he got blown off and he lost his hearing. And a little while after that, Eli went to Daniel and he was like, okay, Daniel, we let you dig your oil wells on our property. When are we going to get our money? And Daniel started slapping Eli and he said, aren't you a healer? When are you going to come heal HW's hearing? What stood out to me about that, beyond the fun of seeing Eli get slapped around, is that I think that's such a valid question. You know, aren't you a healer? When are you going to come heal the people that I love?
Right.
And I think that's a lot of people ask that question authentically to God.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't you a healer? When are you going to do something about it? When are we going to see that happen? I think that's what Job was asking in the book of Job. Like, aren't you a good God? Don't you bless the people who follow you? When are you going to do that? What is happening? I think that was just another moment where Daniel actually experienced something authentic instead of the posturing that he did all the time.
Yeah. And I can kind of see where he's come from with this. Is you have a faith healer. And I mean, let's see, like, this one is a pretty clear evidence. Either the dude can't hear, his son can't hear, or he can hear. And that's the thing about with the hand, when Eli was trying to get the demon out of that woman's hand. Well, I mean, let's be honest. How would you know, right? But with this, he probably didn't even try to go heal HW because really...
He knew there was not going to be any healing.
Oh, yeah. He totally knew. I mean, you can maybe do that with a hand, or maybe you have like a little back pain. No one's going to really know that. But with hearing,
you can't really
fool that. Either the kid's going to hear, it's not. But you can't just kind of psych him out of that. Like, oh, yeah, my hand's kind of, you know, feeling better. Or my back's feeling better. You can't do that with an ear, like loss of hearing.
Yeah.
And so that was actually a pretty well done scene where he was just slapping Eli in the mud. I thought he was going to kill him right there, actually.
Yeah, it looked like he was going for it.
I thought, I'm like, okay, he's going to kill this guy. What? And then he killed him later, which, yeah, that was a pretty epic scene too. I'm not going to lie. What? It's all fake, you know?
I'm glad you know how to remove yourself. All right, so you want to get into the themes?
Yeah, let's get into the themes.
I think one major theme was the bleakness of life.
Talk about the bleakness of life. I mean, I'm sure there are people that are driving right now or listening at home and thinking to themselves, man, you know what I could really go for today? Is just knowing that my life is but a flower. It's but grass that's just going to wither and fade away.
Oh, that's so pretty. You know poetry.
No, I know the Bible.
Oh, anyways. Okay. No, the feeling I got from this movie, besides dread, was pain and death are to be expected. Work is hard and it's dirty.
My work's not hard or dirty. I get to go to a nice, clean...
Everyone you know has ulterior motives. Right? Like, life is just so bleak. Everybody's out to get you. They're just in it for themselves. Everything's difficult and dirty, and you might die or be in horrible pain or lose your hearing. Things are just bad all the time.
Boy, okay, Ecclesiastes.
Don't you think that the film was like that?
I would agree with you up until one part when Daniel was talking to those other oil businessmen, and they're like, we'll offer you this amount of money so you can just have a nice life with your kid and not worry about things. And he's like, oh, you know, like, you don't tell me how to raise my son, blah, 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 blah. But, I mean, they were offering him like a pretty good amount of money. Like I looked it up. I think it was $5,000 back then was equivalent to what $100,000 is now. And I think those men were offering him, I don't remember if it was $100,000 or $1 million, but they're offering him a lot of mm-hmm. money to where he could have had a nice life, to where he kept screwing people over. Clearly he did that when he was trying to buy the land from the people. He was like, yeah, you know, like my son and I, we quail hunt. Like he wasn't, he was trying to convince him like he wanted the land to quail hunt when really he knew that there was oil, but then they knew that there was oil. And so they're trying to bargaining how much money to buy it for. Right.
Right.
So clearly that land was worth a lot more than what he was trying to get at with them. Whereas the other oil men who were trying to buy out his company were giving him a lot of money for what it was worth. And so that kind of led me to think that maybe there was some sort of good in the other business oil men that he didn't have, or that Eli didn't have with his faith, Third Revelation Church.
So when those business guys made that offer, Daniel said, well, what else would I do with myself?
Yeah.
And
that's what I'm saying. The offer is pretty good.
One of the guys said, scratch in the dark like the rest of us.
What does that mean? You just like have horrible thoughts about your life and it ending or something at night?
No. I imagine like a chicken scratching in the dirt looking for grain.
Maybe just, oh,
You're scratching in the dark looking for a way to keep living.
Or a purpose that you, I mean, you have, God built us and designed us to work. So maybe that's what he meant. Because if you have all the money in the world, well, what else are you going to do? Right? There's no,
oh yeah, yeah.
There's no purpose to life if you have everything.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to scratch around in the dirt like the rest of us and try to figure it out. And I found this too very Job-like. Job 5 says, the hungry devour their harvest, even when it is guarded by brambles.
What's a bramble?
Like a branch.
Oh.
What with thorns. The thirsty pant after their wealth. But evil does not spring from the soil, and trouble does not sprout from the earth. People are born for trouble, as readily as sparks fly up from a fire. I feel like that's very much the feeling that's behind this movie. And I recently listened to the sermon by John Mark Comer, who said that the book of Job is about him wrestling with the horrors of life and what God has to do with it. And in the beginning of Job, Job says, you know, God has given and God has taken away, but that's not actually what happened. Right?
Right.
God gave, but Satan took away. And I thought that was just so mind-blowing that Job never realizes that it wasn't God who was doing these awful things to him. Mm-hmm. And God never tells him, hey, it wasn't me that did these awful things to you. He had to scratch in the dark.
Right.
Right. He had to wrestle with these questions. And I think Eli had actually a pretty good quote. He said, God does these things all the times, these mysteries, while we wait for him. And
like I said, broken clock, right twice a day.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, so that's kind of interesting to ponder.
Yeah. So what makes it so interesting to ponder? Like what would someone, you know, if we're examining the scene, what would make them think, huh? Like just looking at their circumstances, their hardships, and be like, I don't know a clear answer to this, and that's okay? Or
I think it's about realizing that having answers is not the answer.
That's deep.
Yeah. I mean, kind of like if you're exploring, the point of exploration is not to discover something.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think the best part of a vacation is the anticipation of going on the vacation and getting to the destination. But once you're at the destination, it's like, all right, cool, this is another place. But like during that time and that process of getting there is probably the funnest part of the whole thing.
For me, the funnest part of a vacation is that first night being back home and sleeping in my own bed.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Getting back home. We're homebodies here. We barely go out to places. And
well, it's also very difficult for us to get out.
Yeah, it's true. With four kids, it sucks sleeping in a hotel room with them.
Yeah, with two babies.
No go. So, yeah. So one of the themes that I picked up on is both Daniel and Eli made the other confess things that they didn't believe in. So we had Eli make Daniel confess that he was a sinner and he needed God's grace and forgiveness. And I think it was at the end when he made Daniel just keep repeating over and over, "I'm a sinner, I'm a sinner, I'm a sinner," that you could see that Daniel did that because of the money, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so it wasn't this genuine, like, oh man, I sinned before God, I need to repent and receive his grace. It was, I'm going to say these things so I can get what I want. And then at the...
I mean, if you think about it, he was actually lying, clearly lying during his confession, because Eli wanted him to say, "I've abandoned my son." And even calling HW his son was a lie. Right. So saying "I abandoned my son" was a lie.
You're right, because that wasn't his son. I mean, it was, I guess, in a sense, that his adopted son at that point.
In a sense.
In a sense, yeah. And then we see at the end of the movie that Daniel does the same with Eli, because Eli wants the money for the land that Daniel bought. And he wanted, like, what, $5,000 for the Third Revelation Church. And Daniel says, "Hey, I want you to admit that you're a false prophet." And at first he was hesitant, but then he kept pressuring and pressuring Eli to do it. And finally Eli caved in and did the same exact thing that Eli made Daniel do. And what's interesting is that both of these guys, they admitted something that they really didn't truly believe in and that they really weren't truly repentant of. It kind of just makes me think about, and I'm not like dissing on the sinner's prayer or anything like that, but it makes you think that just because you say something or just because you confess something with your mouth doesn't mean in your heart of hearts that you really believe it, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, it does.
Yeah, because clearly, we saw Daniel be like, "I'm a sinner, I'm a sinner." And clearly, he did. I mean, it looked like he changed at first because he brought HW back from where he sent him off. And it's like, okay. But then, you know, 15, 20 minutes later, we see him in the mansion just tell him that and tell his son HW, who's all grown up now, say, "You're just a bastard in a basket." And because HW was going to go to another oil business and going to be a competitor of his, and he hated that. And so we see that, and then we obviously see the famous milkshake scene, and then finally Daniel beating Eli Sunday with a bowling pin. And
so you're saying his confession was not authentic?
No, it was not authentic.
I thought this was a Christian film.
Yeah. And so I understand people was like, "Well, can you really just say these words and get into heaven?" And yeah, it's kind of like a yes and no, because in one sense it's like no, because you have to have a changed heart. But in another sense, it does say in the Bible that if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that he was raised from the dead, you will be saved. So there again, there's the confession, but there's also the heart behind the confession. And some people, when they confess, there's not that heart behind the confession. It's just lip service. Mm-hmm. I mean, was it Jesus in the New Testament or the old, or was it God in the Old Testament that says, you know, these people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me?
Yeah, it makes me think of the last scene of God's Not Dead. This professor.
You're saying that guy didn't really believe?
The professor who hated God the entire movie and then gets hit by a car and somebody rushes over and they're like, you should confess and believe in Christ. And he's like, I believe.
But the thief on the cross is kind of the same way. He rejected God and then at the end he kind of came to a repentance. So you could say that that professor was...
What do you mean the thief rejected God?
Well, I mean, he was up there for a reason. I mean,
he was a thief.
Yeah.
All he said was like, remember me when you're with your father. Like,
yeah, I know. This,
he was saying like, I believe in you.
No, I know. What I'm saying is he rejected God most of his life, like the atheist did and then God's Not Dead.
That's conjecture. That is pure conjecture.
What do you mean?
Who's to say that he hadn't just stolen one thing that day and was being hung for stealing?
But he was also with the other thief talking bad about Jesus beforehand. And then somewhere in there, he did change his mind about Jesus. So, which leads me to believe that it's not like he was a worshiper of God.
Okay. But I don't think he was a hardened atheist like the professor.
Right. That's fair. Yeah. I'm just saying he probably wasn't. He probably had somewhat of a hard heart because he was berating Jesus with the other thief, and then somewhere he decided to change his mind at the end.
I like to think of him like an Aladdin. You know, he's just a diamond in the rough.
So you don't think that professor of God's Not Dead really got converted? Boy, are we getting in some deep theology here? Kevin Sorbo.
Oh, I know you love him. That whole scene is just so ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of that movie is ridiculous, but that scene just makes it so unbelievable.
I'm going to be honest. I really dislike most Christian films because they just exaggerate everything. I'm like, that's not real life. Like that one movie that we watched, I loved at the Kendrick brothers with, you know, the Fireproof and Courageous and Facing the Giants. I mean, they were really good, but that last movie, it was like, oh, the guy, he's like this gamer and he just is lazy, but then he, you know, gets a job and this guy mentors him and he, you know, repents, and then everything just goes right with him the rest of the movie, and there's no
other conflict. Like, as soon as he accepts salvation, everything's on the up and up, and he's suddenly wearing button-up shirts.
And he's just like this respectable man. I'm like, that is just, I mean, sure, maybe there are some people like that, I'm sure.
But for most of us,
that's not how that goes. No. That's definitely not how it went for Peter.
I can't remember who said this, but that life is not like a mountain to be climbed where you're going to be at the top someday. It's more like ever widening circles. So you're going to go through the same cycles over and over again, but hopefully
less and less.
You're going to go higher and higher each time with each circle.
I always think of it like a stock market graph where, you know, you go up and then you go down, then you go up, then you go down.
But you'll trend upward.
I get up again, but then I get knocked down again and never going to leave me down. I get knocked. Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Yeah, okay.
I get knocked down. Yeah, that kind of. Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully it just can't be you're projecting up, but along the way you're going to stumble and fall. But yeah, anyways, getting back to that scene. Just because you confess things doesn't mean you believe. So, you know, I totally understand with people who say, well, you can just, you know, say the sinner's prayer and it's all good. I'm like, it depends. Like, is your heart really there wanting to believe in God? Like, it's about a heart change, not just a lip service thing. I think we got to remember that. And so when I looked at that with Daniel, it's obvious definitely from his actions thereafter that he did not have a changed heart. He probably wasn't even given the real gospel, if we're going to be honest with you.
I didn't hear any of it.
Well, he just was forced into it. And that's the thing, is forcing someone into something. That's why I would never be one of those people that would advocate that we just make this a Christian nation and just force people to be Christians. That never works. Mm-hmm. You cannot force people into a relationship with God.
Yeah.
This isn't a religion that you come by force. Like maybe other religions are, but Christianity is about freedom and God. Hey, I mean, he says, you know, follow me or not follow me, but mm-hmm. he's not going to force you to follow him. And yeah. so we shouldn't. I've been on that receiving end where, in college, and I'm not going to name any names or anything, but it wasn't a salvific thing. It was more of a spiritual gifts, speaking in the tongues. And I was asked if I wanted to speak in the tongues. And I was like, I don't know. But they kept pressuring me. And I was like, okay. And then I just kind of said some blah, blah, blah words.
Right.
And
just to make them happy.
Just to make them happy. I knew in my heart that I was not speaking in tongues authentically. I do think that people can speak in tongues. I did not think I was speaking in tongues at that moment.
It does something gross to your soul when you do that. The guy who founded Rhode Island said that forced religion stinks in God's nostrils.
It really does.
And I think it does because when you force somebody to be inauthentic like that, it hurts your soul.
Yeah. God would rather have somebody come to him authentically and have some like really tough hardships to go through and stumble through in their walk rather than someone just say something and live in hypocrisy.
Which hypocrisy is actually my next theme.
Wow, what a great segue. We're getting good at this podcast stuff.
That was impressive. Hypocrisy is definitely a major theme because Daniel is just a showman when he's in the public. His voice gets all loud and boisterous and jumpy, and I'm here to show you guys a good time. Let me ruin your land and your town for my benefit. You'll love it. But, you know, in the background, he's just completely brutal, merciless. And he's not the only one. He's not the only hypocrite in this movie. So Mr. Sunday, Eli Sunday's dad, he was super anxious to please Daniel and HW when they showed up on his farm pretending to be quail hunting. He was very hospitable. Daniel asked for bread and he's like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. We don't have any bread. I'm such a bad host. And even
Daniel or the father?
The father.
Yeah.
And even after the father knew what Daniel was after, he still wanted to sell him his farm. Like, there was just something a little bit off about that guy.
The father.
Yeah.
Mr. Sunday. I wonder why. Maybe he was just desperate and wanted the money.
He could have been desperate. But there was a follow-up scene to that. So Eli told his dad, like, hey, did you think God was going to save you for being stupid?
That was such a great line.
He doesn't save stupid people. And Eli's saying that as a pastor. So I think he's maybe a little bit of a hypocrite.
Yeah.
God doesn't save stupid people. God only saves stupid people. The people who can admit that they are stupid.
Yeah. That was such a great scene. I laughed during that one. It's like, it is really well acted. Just like, you think God saves stupid people? I'm like... Yeah, he saved me.
I believe that the gospel has to be understandable by the simplest person for it to actually be the gospel.
Yeah.
If the gospel is not for people who were born with Down syndromes or who have had traumatic brain injuries, then it's not for people with extreme cognitive function either.
Right. Yeah, it's something that can be, I like what Pastor Emmy said. She said the gospel is like, you know, you could stand at the 1-inch mark of the ocean line and just see its beauty, or you can explore the depths of the ocean and see its beauty as well. It can be under, I mean, from the greatest theologians to the simplest of minds that really can't articulate thoughts like normal people can. People can understand the beauty of who Jesus is and walk with him, but we don't have to have all this like, oh, you know, we have to understand, you know, what happened in the 1600s with this little Reformation thing or whatever, this doctrine, you know what I'm saying? Like we can understand the gospel in really simple terms.
Right. We don't have to have all the special knowledge.
Yeah.
It's nice to.
It's nice good to think yeah. about. Yeah, for sure. But it's not required by any means. And that's what is great about the gospel.
Yeah. You want to hear a wild thought?
No, sure. Go for it.
Abraham never read the Bible.
You know, I wonder how many Christians in the history, because, I mean, the Bible didn't really come out in like a, you know, physical form until what, the 1500s, somewhere around there, right?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, it's not like you can go down in the, you know, the 1200s and be like, I want the Holy Bible. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you could have.
Okay.
I mean, they would have been really expensive, but.
Right. What I'm saying is not an average person can just go there and grab a Bible and read it.
Yes, not until the Gutenberg.
Yes. So how many Christians throughout the centuries have read the Bible?
Yeah.
And we today are like, did you read your Bible? Are you doing a yearly Bible plan? As if it's the normal thing that Christians have done for 2,000 years, and it's not.
That's wild.
I mean, it's just a crazy, and it's a crazy thing. I think about that sometimes, like, man, how did Christians stay Christians without reading the Bible all the time?
I think your thought is more wild than my thought. But it's the same gist, because Abraham, who was this great man of faith and remembered in the Bible as a man after God's own heart, well, says he was a man of great faith anyway, and a father of the faith, he never read the Bible. What he did was he walked with God. He talked with God. He obeyed sometimes.
I don't know much about Abraham Lincoln. All I know, he was kind of a comp. I know that he was a part of freeing the slaves.
Are you serious? Do you seriously think I'm talking about Abraham Lincoln?
I thought that's who you're talking about. Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln, the father of our faith, who the Bible remembers.
Well,
you know, he was also not Daniel's brother. Did you know that?
See, when you said Abraham, the father, I immediately thought of our, you know, the fathers of our country.
Wow, what a patriot. Man, we got to wrap this up. We're crazy.
Yeah, okay. All right, so my last theme of the movie, there's probably more themes, but this is one that I really picked up on. And is, so you have Daniel, he's a capitalist. You have Eli, he's a faith, religious person. Both of them are greedy, mm-hmm. obviously. I mean, Daniel, he mentions that Eli mentions every chance that he gets that he wants that $5,000 for the third Revelation Church. And Daniel, he's clearly wanting to make millions so that he can live in his nice, big, fancy mansion that we see there at the end. And what I want to say is that just because you see corruption in capitalism, I know you read a book on capitalism, and just because you see corruption in religious faith circles, like definitely within, you know, Catholicism and even Protestantism, we've seen corruption in that area. Just because that there's these corrupt systems doesn't mean that the system in and of itself is evil. It's portrayed that way because the people who are running those, like Daniel Plainview or Eli Sunday is because those people are evil and they're the ones that are greedy. But a faith system, a faith religious system, like if you were to go to our church, I think, is fairly good about following the ways of Jesus, and they're very selfless people for the most part. I mean, I'm sure you're going to find a bad egg in every church that you go to, but what I'm saying is that just because it's a system that it doesn't mean it's corrupt. Like systems aren't corrupt. It's like saying, well, money is evil. The Bible doesn't say money is evil. It says the love of money is evil. Like money can be used to buy drugs, or it could be used to buy a homeless person a meal. Mm-hmm. Like it's what you do with that. And so with capitalism, yeah, sure, you can have people that are capitalists, that are greedy, and it's a horrible system because the leader of that system is bad. But if you had someone who's a capitalist and was actually giving out money, trying to help the world, then it could actually be in some ways a good thing if it's handled in the right hands, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It's making me think of the reason why the medieval church got so yucky. It was actually because of this same intertwining of wanting power and riches and trying to get there by manipulating the religious.
Yeah.
Because the kings and the popes, they kind of like started using each other to get more and more powerful. The king was like, hey, I'm the only one who can anoint a pope. And the pope was like, yeah, but I'm the only one that can bless a king. So you need me and I need you. And if you're like close to me relationally, that's going to be even better. So like, that's why things got so nasty, is because the love of money and the love of power got into the middle of the church.
Yep.
And yeah, things can get real screwed up real fast, but it doesn't mean that the Bible got messed up.
Right.
They just weren't even reading it.
And it doesn't even, and that's what, I mean, the whole point of Job, or what you talked about earlier, is that Job was kind of in a sense blaming God for taking away what he had. But obviously we read that, yeah, I mean, God allowed it, but I mean, Satan was the one that took it away. No one's blaming Satan for this. I mean, there's not a mention of like, well, Satan took this away. No, it's always God. And it's like, why are we blaming God for what Satan does and corrupts?
Or even for natural evil.
Natural evil. Or why are we blaming God for what people do? I mean, I'm sorry if this is hurting your ears, but people are sinful and wicked. I'm one of them. Like, people can do evil things. They can do good things too, but they can do evil things. And it's like, why are we blaming God? Like, if you had a bad teacher in elementary school or college, or
are you going to bring up that gal again with the soda?
It doesn't mean that we should just be like, you know what, all teachers are bad. All that crap's bad. You know, you had a bad experience with somebody. So what I would say, if like people who've been in a church and they experience something like an Eli or corruption with greed, it doesn't mean the church is bad. It just means the people who were in leadership of that said church, that's what made it bad. I'm sorry to say, and it sucks, but don't blame God and don't blame other churches around. Like, there are a lot of good churches that are doing a lot of good things. And God, obviously, he's good, he's perfect, he's holy, like he's the most loving being in the entire universe. Like, he does not do evil. And so we can't blame him for when evil stuff happens, because it's evil people and it's other demon Satan beings out there. Anyways, that was just my rant for that. That was just a theme that I picked up on. So yeah,
that's good.
Well, we got to wrap it up here because it's been like an hour and 20 minutes.
Yes.
And so next movie that we're going to do, we were going to do Sonic the Hedgehog 3, but you know what, Amazon, I'm sorry. I'm pissed at you. So I'm not going to buy or rent $20 for a Sonic the Hedgehog 3 movie.
CEO is shaking his boots.
They are. So you guys better drop the price down to like $3.
Yeah, not getting our $20. That'll right. hurt them.
So we were going to do that because your friend Rachel recommended that movie. But
our friend.
Our Rachel. Friend. Sorry, our friend. More your friend than my friend because you hang out with her more. Anyways, we were going to do that movie, but decided against it. So we are going to do E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
Yes.
And because our kids are really into alien stuff right now.
Anything to do with aliens, they yeah, get excited
about. I mean, they were really happy about watching that movie last night. Like, oh my gosh, they couldn't stop talking. I was like, shut up, do you not? Like, let's watch the movie.
And I was like, let them talk. This is how like, they process.
No, I don't care. I want to watch a movie. This is the last time we're going to watch a movie with them that we decide to record on. Because I'm like trying to think through things and they're like, why is he doing that? Like, watch the movie. Anyways.
Well, if you missed it, the three main kids, they're brothers and sister.
Oh, okay. Well, that's... Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, yep. E.T. next week. So, thank you guys for listening to the show.
Yep. And as my buddy Elizabeth Elliott always says, it's not the experiences of our lives that change us. It's our response to those experiences.
And like my buddy Blaine always says... Don't party too hard without me. What? Catch you guys later.
Bye now.
Whether it's at home or at the movie theater, Movie Night Apologetics exists
to show you the goodness of God in movies we watch.
I'm movie apologist Clark.
And I'm Bethany.
And this is Movie Night Apologetics.